Welcome to the Action Sports Podcast. We created this podcast to help you become sponsorable by learning from the athletes, brands, and those that are crushing it in action sports. So crank up the volume and get inspired to turn your passion of riding into your career.
What is up, action sports enthusiasts? If you have not already joined the Action Sports Club, head over to ascarmy.com/podcast so you can get your club invite and start learning how you can land sponsorships and spend way more time riding. Again, that is ascarmy.com/podcast. See you in there.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Action Sports Podcast. Again, stoked to be here because I have one of the guests that I've probably been the most nervous to have on the podcast in a long time. For everybody that is into motorcycles, dirt bikes, hard enduro trials, you guys all know his name, and I have no other than Cody Webb on the podcast with us tonight. So Cody, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Just happy to be here. Stoked to be part of it, and there's no reason to be afraid. I'm the person like everyone else.
I see, and that's what I like. That's what I think is really funny about how we idolize people, athletes and stuff, we idolize them because they've made all these accomplishments and they literally have gold hanging from their necks when they're winning X Games. And we put people like you on a pedestal because we're like, well, we'll never be able to be as good as him. We'll never be able to make it that way. But it's funny because you have people like that too in your life where you might put.
Oh yeah, definitely. We all do.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's funny that we do it, but I just am grateful for the platform to talk to people like you, to learn from you and bring our community closer together. And that's why we're here, to learn and grow. And you know what? We want to grow it so we can have a larger community, bring more people into it and get the exposure that it deserves. So that's why I'm stoked to have a titan like Cody Webb on the podcast. So you like that? Call you the titan.
Yeah, I never heard that one before. I like that one.
Excellent. So to start off every podcast, man, I want to know more about your childhood, how you grew up in the industry, how you got started. I know you got started on a Z50. Talk about what a Z50 is, because it's actually different than the other Honda bikes. Not a lot of people know what they are, but talk about how you started, your influencers in your life. And let's just start the story from the very beginning and we'll make our way to where you're at today.
Yeah. So it started a long time ago. It started on bicycles, which everyone's normally on a bicycle before they get on a motorcycle. Nowadays, I mean, I had my kid pushing him around on like a bicycle when he was like only 6 months old or something like that.
Nice.
But so my dad was a trials rider. He rode nationally, even competed in the world, like the Trial of Nations, which is basically like the Olympics of trials, four times, pretty much right around the time I was born. So my dad finished fourth in the nation a couple times and California state champs. So I grew up in Northern California, kind of near the Santa Cruz Mountains. And I basically was traveling to these events with my dad, my parents when I was a little kid, and riding around on a bicycle with training wheels at 2 years old. And I guess we were in Nebraska, some middle of nowhere, like old mine type thing. And there was potholes all over in the road, like a dirt road. And I kept getting stuck with my training wheels because it was lifting the rear tire off the ground in the potholes. So I started riding without training wheels when I was two because I was getting frustrated that I was stuck in the pole. So my dad took the training wheels off. And then somewhere around the age of 3 to 4 years old, I started riding a motorcycle. I think we originally bought like a PW50 for $300.
Nice.
And it went through myself, both my sisters, my best friend, like everyone learned how to ride on this bike. And we sold it like 15 years later for $300 again, like the same price
right?
We bought it at. So, you know, I grew up on a, you know, PW50, quickly moved to the Honda Z50, the old metal tank, twin chalk in the back, a wobbly spoke front end. Like every time you ride the thing, the front end wobbles. We still actually have that bike. We kind of fixed it up, but
oh, cool.
I dumped it once in a mud hole and my dad got really mad at me and we had to rebuild it. And then it still runs, but it just smokes a lot. Like it's definitely burning some oil, but still at my parents' house, we decked it out with some, my web stickers and my original racing number. So
nice.
We still got that bike and, you know, I was basically, I wasn't really like a normal moto kid. I would go to trials events and I'd ride like the novice line. They used to have kids events at local races. They still do. And I would ride basically the easiest line possible between ribbons. In trials, they call them sections. So I would ride like the easiest way through like a ribbon off section. And they score you with trials, like for putting your feet down or crashing. It's kind of like golf, but for motorcycles, like lowest score wins at the end of a trial. So you have this one little short section where someone's observing you and basically scoring you. So if you put your foot down, you get a point. So if you know too many strokes in golf, you get added points. This, except there's not really a par in trials. It's just whoever has the least amount of feet dabs at the end of the day or crashes. If you crash, it's a penalty of 5 points. So I basically just grew up running trials and quickly we realized that the Z50 wasn't going to cut it anymore. So I think when I was 7, maybe, my dad got me like an 80 CC kind of like big wheel trials bike. So it was some company from Spain called Ameca Tecno, which I think that brand makes e-bikes now or something, like probably some janky e-bikes these days.
Okay.
I know Fantic used to make trials bikes and they have an e-bike now too. But so I competed, started actually running trials like novice line on the main day events. When I was 7, I remember it's just like my first memory that I still recall, riding some pretty big events and some, you know, the Europeans in our, the sport of trials were always basically insane and at the top level compared to the people in the States. I still remember one trial back in 1997. I was there on my bike, my little Mecha Tecno 80, and seeing some of the stars from Spain riding at that event. They'd fly them over from one event every year. And, you know, I didn't really grow up with idols like, you know, Ricky Carmichael, like most other people. I knew kind of about motocross, but we barely had like cable TV growing up. I feel like we had like the twist dial TV to turn the channels forever.
Yep, local so, channels. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, every day for me was going to school and my mom saying I had to do my homework before I went outside. And I would just go ride my bicycle or motorcycle every day after school. Cause we grew up on 3 acres and
okay.
I don't know. I didn't have TV. I wasn't allowed to have a PlayStation. I had to go buy my PlayStation. I forget how old I was, but I went and bought my old PlayStation and now I bought an Xbox when I blew my knee out and I played it for like 2 weeks and then I could start doing PT and I was over it.
Yeah. He was like, I'm done with this.
Yeah. So, you know, I think I was very fortunate that I grew up with, you know, my dad who was a really good competitor in trials and basically, you know, it was kind of nice living out in the countryside and having some property to do whatever we wanted and, you know, building bicycle jumps with other kids. And my best friend growing up, he was up the street from me. So we got him on a motorcycle. He wasn't allowed to ride forever because, you know, motorcycles are dangerous. And then once my youngest sister started riding, he had like finally talked his parents into getting a bike too for him. So that's it was awesome. Just a, you know, a fun area and then going and riding local events. And there was a couple other kids in our area. And it, you know, it basically got to the point where my dad didn't care about himself anymore. And it kind of went into helping me. And he was still competing in the events when I started running nationals when I was about 10 years old. At the time, I was the youngest person to ever ride the nationals, yeah. National trials events. So my dad would ride, I think, the expert class. And the expert class started, like, an enduro where every minute another rider goes out. So my dad would start like an hour or two before me. And he would rush the first lap. You do 3 laps. He'd rush as quick as he could. And then he would ride with me the rest of the day. So it was pretty cool. And, you know, I definitely was fortunate enough that, you know, every weekend we go riding 7 a.m., go to the same donut shop, and I'd get like a strawberry milk or chocolate milk, which definitely was not healthy. And I don't know. I just rode every weekend with my dad, and everything was basically like cutting out lines and try this and try that. And if it's one thing I learned, it's like, you never say I can't, because mm-hmm. I got in a lot of trouble all the time. If I ever said I can't, my dad did not like those two words and to get in unison together.
Well, especially in trials. Cause as a spectator as myself, like trials is extremely difficult, but people like Tony Boken, he just like does it. And you're like, okay, well, it's not impossible. Clearly it's not.
It's impossible. He's a freak.
but it's like, you know, I have a 5-year-old, and so I teach her this too. Every single night we have this bedtime routine, and in that bedtime routine, the last thing I do with her is I go through some small affirmations. I am smart. I am beautiful. And one of those things is I can do anything. And so instilling something like that into a child's mind at a young age, something I wish would have happened to me, and I'm grateful that it happened to you. It gives you the confidence at a young age to actually know and believe in yourself, have that confidence that I believe a lot of people lack, because they didn't get that instilled at his young age. And so your dad, you know, hats off to him. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. He was definitely moments where he was super tough on me. And like years later, there was a couple people who would come to me and be like, I can't believe you made it. Like, how did you survive him like being so hard on you? But, you know, obviously there was some tough times, but there was some really good times. And, you know, today I'm fortunate enough that, you know, I went to school and got an engineering degree, but I don't have to use it, because at this point in my life, I'm still able to, you know, make a living riding motorcycles. I'm not living in a $3 million house, but you know, I have a roof over my head, and I got motorcycles, bicycles, and a van and family. And that's really all I need. I enjoy myself. So it is what it is.
I just love that. I love stories like that. I'm grateful that you're sharing that with us. It's great.
Yeah, no, definitely was pretty fortunate with that. My mom used to ride a little bit too back mm-hmm. in the day. She competed in a couple of local events, but she was basically like became house mom with everything. Like
right.
even in like school, I played basketball and elementary, like junior high and high school. And she was like we had like a big van, like 12 seater van or something like that.
So like with a small family.
Yeah. Well, no, I had two sisters. So there's
right.
Yeah. We didn't have enough.
A small family
12.
For a big 8-seater.
So like my mom would like take the whole basketball team to like the games and like show up with like Costco pizzas for everyone before the game. It's so different now. It's like I grew up eating taquitos, pizza, like terrible diet. And now it's
hamburger
like
helper by chance.
Yeah. Hamburger. It was like my dad's favorite meal. It was the
stroganoff,
like shepherd's pie, you know, shepherd's pie.
Oh yeah.
She would get the shepherd's pie from Costco and like add her own mashed potatoes into it, and like even more mashed, like just a huge.
There's already a lot of mashed potatoes, but they're instant. So yeah,
even more. Yeah. So I don't know. And now it's like everyone has like a food sensitivity, or you can never do that with kids nowadays. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, that's so true.
So it was just a little different. Things have changed a lot, but at the same time, like, I don't know. There's just definitely people who, you know, I just feel like my dad knew he had his time mm-hmm. and wanted to put it towards me. And at this point, my son's still too young, and we may have another kid. We may not. I mean, we'll see. We're not planning right now, because one is a maniac.
Yeah.
So I don't know how people do multiple. They're impressive.
How far apart between you and your sister, your next sister?
Like 4 years and then 3 years. So 7 years between all of us. So
yeah. So that's not too bad. Cause then you can figure things out.
He's not even a year and a half yet. So,
right.
But you know, I'm not ready to hang up. I still feel like I have more to prove. So,
for sure.
And I've already done more than I ever expected I would have done. So I'm just going to try and keep this snowball rolling while we still can. And when I know I'm ready, I want to just, you know, I had my chance. I don't need to do it anymore. I want to put it into my kids, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and you had an interview that they talked, or somebody was asking, are you going to do another 10 years like Mike Brown? And you're like, probably not.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You never know. But yeah. As right, like, I don't know. We'll see how I'm feeling. Yeah. You don't feel like I'm 25 anymore. So
yeah, I know. And well, you're 33.
Just about. Not yeah, quite so we're about maybe 33. maybe when this comes out, I'll be 33. Unfortunately, right. But
so you still. Let's see. I had a conversation with Cody McNulty up in Canada, and he went right. He rides snow bikes, and he went riding with a seven. Please, I hope I'm not getting my facts wrong. No, sorry, that's wrong. That wasn't Cody McNulty. It was Darren, this guy named Darren. He's a timber sled ambassador, and he's in his 50s. He actually went out riding. A couple guys at a gas station were talking to them. They said, hey, can we tag along with you? They go up into the mountains and ride, and they're all keeping up together, which was pretty cool. Come to find out, the oldest guy that was with him was 78 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Still cruising. Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. It may, I don't think you should discredit it. I think it's something totally achievable, but you also understand you had some surgeries, like, you know, in the recent years. Yeah. So that takes effect on the body. You know, that causes a lot of long-term pain, or can cause long-term pain. And
mental too, like to know and trust yourself that you're good after. That's almost the toughest part.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, having that confidence again, right? But it's definitely something, if you want to work for it, you can work towards it. There's a lot of physical therapy to work through, and it looks like you are the one that can do work through that and make it possible and just keep going. So that's cool. I want to congratulate your dad real quick, because he was inducted into the North American Trials Hall of Fame, right? Just last year.
I don't know him. He might have. I didn't even know. He didn't even tell me that.
Oh, yeah. He got inducted.
He probably was. What the heck?
He did. He got inducted. It's part of the North American Trials Council. He was inducted for like a 10-year span of riding. So he got inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Funny fact about that. It was 1994 at the, I think, or it might have been 97. It was 94, I believe. There was the World Trials Championship in Northern California at Donner Ski Ranch, which is like really close to Lake Tahoe. Mm-hmm. They had a world event in 1981, which was like one of the highest scoring like trials events for like everyone probably ever. Like they had crazy amount of crashes and points. So my dad rode the world championship in 1981, and then he rode the world championship again in 1994. And I mean, he did terrible because those guys are so good. But all the Americans didn't do that good. So that's normally how it works. But they like brought him up on the podium after the event and gave him like a big energized, like stuffed Energizer bunny. Cause he's just the one that keeps chugging along. So I think that Energizer bunny's probably like still stacked away in a shed or something.
Cool. So why didn't you stick with trials?
I mean, I still rode trials. I actually competed in trials till 2015. And then when I got on the factory KTM team, since it was like a conflicting bike, I wasn't allowed to ride trials anymore. So I had to go and buy a trials bike. I didn't have one for like 2 years. And then I went and bought one. So I just didn't really put as much effort into it anymore though. I was just having so much more fun riding dirt bikes. And I felt like I was learning something every time I went on ride. Like I would see an improvement. Whereas like trials, I just kind of like shot up, and then it was kind of just so much work and you're not really excelling, you know what I mean? So dirt bikes was something new and exciting. And then trials, like everyone I rode with back in Northern California moved or basically grew up quote unquote and had normal jobs. So I just didn't have anyone to ride with, and I was tired of riding by myself. So it wasn't really a rebellious thing. It was just, I was finding it more enjoyable. And then I was getting pretty good results kind of in the enduro cross races, and extreme really wasn't too big yet in the States, but I was riding for Beta and they brought me over to Italy. So I got to go to Europe and do some extreme races in like 2011, 2012, maybe something like that. Mm-hmm. So it basically just opened up a lot more opportunities. And then all of a sudden I'm like in magazines and I was like the top, like I won a trials national championship and I wasn't even in like a magazine ever, you know what I mean? So the trials community just doesn't get enough respect for how gnarly those guys are. And I
think at least not here. Definitely not here. They don't.
No, definitely not here. And I think it's just because they don't sell quite enough bikes a year. Like people think of it as a bike or an extra bike. No one thinks of it as like an actual bike. You know what I mean? Like even all my dirt bike friends that have one, like they treat it like a mountain bike. And we go riding, and they're like, hey, what do you think is wrong with this? I'm like, your steering head is completely loose. Like, how are you riding this bike? Like, you got to work on this thing. It's not just like a bicycle. You just don't put it in the garage and leave it. And then it's good to go every time. Like, it's just like your dirt bike. So to me, I think trials bikes are just a cross training tool or a play bike to people here in the States. And they just don't get the love they deserve because the trials riders are, they're good. They're really good. And the bikes are awesome. All the bikes are awesome too. You know,
That's interesting. You talk about that because, you know, I don't really know how it is over in Europe, specifically between hard enduro and trials. Both sports are bigger over there than they are here. I mean, I'd be hard pressed to say that the US isn't catching up on hard enduro because we have tons and tons of events going on now. And lots of people.
We're definitely like the riders are getting way better now.
Yeah.
Like before when I rode hard enduro races, I just went out and like rode around for a couple hours out in the mountains and did a couple hits here and there. And now I'm like full on like making little training courses and cutting out canyons and trails and like pounding out motos on like ridiculously hard stuff. So the level's gone up insane. Like before I would like ride through something really hard and just like cruise around the race and no one could catch up to me and I'd win here in the States. And now like I have to try and I'm like, dang it, why can't it be like it was before? But honestly, it's better because now the level is really elevating for everyone here. And I think we're catching up to the Europeans because for a while I was kind of like the only guy that could kind of hang with them. And now I'm almost kind of like dragging everyone with me behind me, trying to push for better, you know?
Right. No, that's funny. Yeah. Cause you got a lot of friends that are really pushing for it too.
Yeah. I mean, the target's on my back. Like I can't let
see
up.
You.
Yeah. The kids beat me. Yeah.
I want to move into the sponsor section of this episode. And talk about like the starting out with sponsors. And before we do that, let's talk about how your mom and dad were able to support you riding and starting and racing. Cause like you said, your dad kind of eventually stepped back and really let you progress and really focused time, energy, money on you and let you progress. And talk maybe a little bit more to getting into enduro. Cause your mom didn't want you to do that. She didn't want you to have a bike. But you got that bike anyways, and then you started focusing on that. Like, how are you able to support this racing? Because racing's not cheap, both trials and enduro.
Yeah. So, I mean, starting out trials, obviously I wasn't paying for anything because I was a little kid and my parents are going to the National. We had a motorhome. My dad has been a diesel mechanic his whole life. He actually has like some of the biggest hands of anyone you've ever met. So if you've like meet people who knows my dad, they'll like talk about his hands on diesel mitts. So like, you know, my dad like works with like a torque, like a torque wrench. That's like, I got like a, it's like 3 feet long, you know what I mean? Like he's really putting the force on some of these motors he's rebuilding. And so he's been a diesel mechanic his whole life. He still is one. He's like one of the hardest working guys I've ever met. Like young kids can't even keep up with him. Like we'll do a home project. Some friends will come over and like they can't even keep up with my dad, who's like way older than him. So
hey, where's the pizza tip?
He never exercises. He's just like, he's just kind of gnarly. And it's the old man strength, you know. You never underestimate old man strength. So I mean, you know, obviously I was fortunate enough that my parents took me to all these trials events when I was younger. And then I still remember like my very first sponsor I think I ever had was Regina Chains. I was like, my mom helped me, and I don't even know. I think they still make chains, but
was it first trials or do they do
for trials? Yeah. On trials.
Okay. That's why
I think they have moto bikes. I think they're from England or something, but they're not super big anymore, but they kind of were for a while, I think. Who knows? But I basically, like, my mom basically used it for, like, English class. Like, I'd write up my little resume. She'd make me write it, and then she would, like, review it for me. So I think it helps you learn more than just only getting sponsors. Like, you learn how to write and be presentable. And so, I was, like, 10 years old or something like that, writing, like, my own little personal resume, racing resume. And I don't even remember what the first deal was, if we got changed for free or
That was 1998. Discount. So 98 was, you had to have resumes going on. You had to actually kind of show up. There was no social media.
Yeah. So I had resume. And then when I was 10, it was really, really fortunate that Jeff Aaron won, like, the 10-time national trials champion. He started his own team, ERE. It was Extreme Riding Entertainment. So he used to do a bunch of shows. He was actually one of the first American rebel athletes in 2000.
I did come across his page with your name on it. And I was like, that's interesting. Yeah. But it was more with your dad. So.
Oh, yeah. My dad competed against him. And then Jeff competed against me, too, because Jeff was at it for a while.
Okay.
So Jeff started this team. It was me. He had a woman on the team, two other guys, I think. So when I was 10 to 14, I was on that team. So a lot of sponsors were already part of that team. So I was getting, like, tires through it and gear. And growing up before that, like, before I first started riding nationals, I only had one pair of riding gear. And I would only wear that at events. And I would practice in jeans and a t-shirt. So, it's come a long way now where, like, I have gear coming out of my ears and I'm like, here, you need some pants. I literally can't wear all the gear I have. And then, like, I wasn't allowed to ride my gear because I would ruin it. So I had to practice in jeans.
Yeah. I did see a picture of you and your dad practicing. And I was like, what gear is that? And it was a pair of jeans and a shirt. I was like,
Yeah. See, I was ahead of Travis Pastrana when he had, like, the lumberjack.
Yeah, for sure.
I was ahead of my time. I already started. I had real jeans, fake jeans. So, and then I was just doing well. I won the high school championship 2002 when I was, like, 12 years old. I still wasn't in high school. And then the next year I won the expert national championship. So I went to pro at the end of that year. And I got an offer from Sherco Motorcycles back then, because they were only making trials bikes at that time. I think their first enduro bike was, like, 07. So I started riding trials for Sherco in 2005. And I was 15 years old and had a salary at 15. Like, I was stoked on that. Like, it wasn't much, but, like, I still was making money, you know what I mean? And riding motorcycles. So basically now I started with, like, kind of flying to events because Sherco had a whole trailer. And so basically my money went to Southwest flights to go to the races. And I had my, like, little tax write off of my mom was, like, kind of an accountant growing up. So, you know, she kind of helped me with the money I was making, which basically paid for me to fly to these events. And my dad was my mechanic/minder.
Right.
So I rode for Sherco from 2005 to 2009. And the last 2 years on that contract, I was, like, riding a 4-stroke trials bike, which is not, like, Tony Bo's the only guy that's, like, really successful on a 4-stroke in trials, but I think his bike probably also costs, like, $100,000 in titanium and custom parts, you know?
Right.
So 08 and 09 were pretty much, like, not good years for me. That's when I was kind of, like, gaining weight, and I was, like, kind of right after high school, and I was just dinking around, not being serious, you know, at the same time. Like, I was still riding, but at that time I was, like, working at the construction place, and then I got laid off from there, and I was working under the table for construction contractor, basically just helping, like, build fences and work on homes. And it taught me a lot of, like, cool trade stuff that I can use today because on my own home, you know, there's always something to do. Yeah. So I was basically, you know, still had the small salary from Sherco and just doing side stuff on the side. And then I was going to school at the time too. I was doing junior college and I just wanted to be an engineer because my dad always told me, go to school so you don't end up like me. So I wanted to do mechanical engineering because it's related to motorcycles and everything. So, let's see, 2009, I had that. I was just overriding that bike and having a hard go of it. And I was kind of starting to do enduro cross stuff too. I think I made both main events I did in 2009 on that KTM I bought. Mm-hmm. I bought that bike in 2008. So I did an enduro cross then, but I was just like riding the dirt bike here and there for fun. Like it wasn't me trying to do anything with it yet. Right. You know, I was still focusing on trials,
but you did compete a little bit.
Yeah, I did compete a little bit, basically just like three events a year or something. Right. Like not really. And then 2010, I signed with Gas, and I basically just was like, this is it. Like I'm either doing it this year or I'm going to focus on school and go that route. And I was just super dominant in trials that year. Pat Smodgy, the guy he's won like 11 or 12 champions. He's won a ton of championships now. He was my arch nemesis. I was supposed to be like the next best thing. And then he like swooped in and just won like four in a row. It was just like, I was always just like close, but could never get him. And then 2010, I lost like that summer 2009, I lost a ton of weight and started running. I was more fit. I was on a bike that I loved. I just felt like everything was kind of going well for me. And I put a lot of effort out that year because I was like, this, like, I'm either doing it or I'm not. And right. It just having all that success, and they basically just gave me a magazine bike that was left over from Gas to do enduro cross. And I podiumed the final event of the year on that bike, got on the podium. And I think I finished fifth in the championship, and that's with missing a round or something like that. I forget. Maybe I got 10th. I forget exactly. I might've got 10th, but like things were going like this. It wasn't like I was kind of getting stagnant anymore.
Right.
And it opened up the doors for me to race for Beta, an Italian manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like the perfect fit. I was a trials guy, really good at trials. I just won the trials championship and I was proving myself on the enduro bike. So I signed with Beta in 2011. And then that's basically when I started doing enduro cross and got that podium. Like enduro cross was really kind of booming at that point. So sponsors kind of just started like coming to me, or things kind of just started coming to me. Like I started wearing Moose gear, CD boots. Then, it's kind of when I first started my relationship with Bell Helmets. I was with Bell for almost 10 years. Wow. And they were local to my area.
Yeah.
So, you know, no one kind of knew who I was the whole time around trials. Like people knew, but they didn't really care, you know? And then all of a sudden you're doing really well on something that's getting press. And
right.
All of a sudden my life started getting a little bit easier. And,
break that down for a second. You just said that your life was getting a little bit easier. How was it getting easier?
Cause I wasn't having to like try as hard to get sponsors anymore. And then at a certain point I was able to just focus on racing more because I wasn't doing other side job stuff with cash. Cause then all of a sudden I was getting like, had a small little salary from Moose, and I had a bonus program with Bell Helmets through the motorcycle superstore thing that used to happen. And then I had the salary from Beta and bonuses from that. And then the enduro cross bonuses. So, you know, I don't remember how old I was, 22, maybe 23. Like I was still living at home, my parents' house. And I think somewhere around then we just got like a foreclosed property that I helped them work on a bunch. And there was like a pool house. I was like basically still living at home. Cause I was like 5 minutes away. in like Full House. So, but like my enduro cross track was like in the backyard from there. So I would like, wake up in the morning, hike up there, water the track, go back down, make breakfast. And then I would drive around the hill to my parents' house, grab my bike and do motos. So I don't know, just things kind of got easy there for a while. And then it gets to a point where like things are going, it just gets too crazy. Like all of a sudden you have more events going on and more things to do. And then Instagram really took off. And then that's like, it's a whole new thing now. So before I went to like, you know, I wasn't married. I didn't have a kid. I didn't have any responsibilities. It was just like, go out and ride. Like, this is awesome. And now I'm like just juggling everything because I, you know, I'm married now, have a kid. We got our dogs. I'm trying to ride and train. I'm trying to, you know, work on the house. I'm trying to do social media stuff. I'm trying to do YouTube. Like now it's like easier to get sponsors, but it's also like way harder because there's so much more work.
Right. That's kind of what we talked about for a second before we started. So let's, I want to stop you there for a sec. It's 8:32 my time. So 6:32 your time. That's our hour window. I'm going to put the ball in your court. If you want to proceed, we can keep going for another little bit because we've touched on your sponsors all the way up to this point, like how you got the big sponsors, how that all worked. But I think we can still talk for another 15, 20 minutes on.
Yes. Yeah, we can do that for another 15, 20 minutes. That's fine.
Okay. And then what we'll probably end up doing is splitting this one into two segments. I'll release them two different podcasts just so we can break them up and get more exposure on them. So, okay. So you having, so like what you're saying to me is like, even though you're getting sponsors coming to you now, or you've been having sponsors come to you basically since what, like you said, 2011, 2012, which 23, 24 years old. It got easier for a bit, but now you're starting to see another transition into where it's getting harder. And let's talk about that for a sec, because you come from really the sponsored rider had to show the podium or show that you can make it on the podium, showed that you could, or at least show results on paper. And that when people were looking at the results or going to the races, your name was getting yelled all the time by the commentator, by the announcer. And so it was easy for you to kind of have a name, especially in the enduro cross at that time, right? But now that we have social media, it's different.
Yeah, the stars really aligned during that enduro cross era when like enduro cross is really big. Hopefully it's on the rise again, but it's been struggling for a couple of years. But I mean, like Dirt Rider magazine was massive, and now Dirt Rider is like one person just keeping it alive, and Dirt Bike magazine. And you know, I was never saying no to being in the magazine if they wanted to shoot photos or this or that. Like I was in NorCal and I would drive 7 hours to SoCal and do like photos and then drive back the next day because I knew that being in the magazine is what people want to see and it's something to help you. So, you know, I was fortunate enough that I was good enough at enduro cross that I had that opportunity to be in the magazines. But I think that helped me a ton because Cycle News was, I would read Cycle News every week growing up when I was a kid. Like that was how I got any news or notification. And now it's very rare that I'll ever go to cyclenews.com and look at what's going on because, you know, it went to my house. Like for me, I'm kind of like the old school to new school guy where I really appreciated like Cycle News every week. Like I looked forward to looking through that magazine. So
I love looking when I got Transworld Motocross showing up my like I was like, man, why did I just get this episode? I gotta wait a whole another 30 days till Transworld Motocross comes out again. What the heck?
Yeah, you know,
I completely understand that. You were stoked to get it in the mail. Now you're like, don't get me any mail. It's gonna be a bill.
Yeah. But everything was just so like now. Like today, whereas before, like there was like a suspense factor to it. So I was in like the beginning of the Instagram era where I was just like posting, like, I don't even, there's a lot of stuff I went back and deleted because I was like, this is terrible. Like, why did I, like, not very politically correct or like stuff like that where like you're just like banished these days. You know what I mean? I haven't even been, I don't even know how deep I would have been in my deep Instagram right now, but
they've got nothing in there. I went deep. There's nothing in there that's super crazy.
I deleted like some stuff.
I don't miss that. Thanks.
Yeah. See, a new bet. Everyone's coming for you. Like, you know, people, some celebrities are getting hit for stuff they said in like 2011 on Twitter or something.
Right.
Like, I don't need it. So who knows? I don't think there's anything that bad, but people twist things. So with Instagram, like, I literally had to do, when I signed with KTM in 2016, I had to sit in on like a 2-hour class, like at KTM headquarters for like a marketing school with the marketing girl that used to work. She's not there anymore, but they had like a whole PowerPoint for us and what to post, what not to talk about. Like, it was even to the point of like talking about like guns. Like, you can't talk about guns unless you're hunting. Like, that's the only time you can talk about guns if you're a hunter. Like, they've done their research, you know what I mean? And I always tell people today, like, KTM is just a marketing company that happens to sell motorcycles, you know what I mean? Like, they do a really good job with the marketing things, and they made us do marketing training, and it even came down to the point where if, you know, two riders have the same exact results, whoever has the bigger influence on social media is going to get the ride.
Whoa. So,
and that shows today like how serious it is for people to have like some sort of social media base. You know what I mean? Like, if you're on the same level as someone else, you basically need to have a better social media game as well, if you want to get, because these companies want content, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So bear with me for just one sec. That's something I really like about like doing these interviews. We can actually sit on here and take a look at like the difference. So maybe you could explain this too. Let's see. Oh, why isn't it showing me? Let's maximize that real quick. So you have 162,000 followers on your Instagram account, and 1500 or almost about 1548, about 1550 posts on your Instagram account. And then story wise, it looks like you're in there doing stories often as well. So
yeah, normally pretty often.
Yeah. So like, this is great. This is great. Like, to talk about how this has changed everything. And like, you have such a big presence now. So when you are competing, and if that guy that's on your team, and if he doesn't have the presence like you do, just by a little bit, you're getting the ride. That is so interesting how they've moved that way. And I'd be surprised if it's not across the board.
Yeah.
Or in some manner.
Oh, for sure, everything. But now it's to the point where all these stupid companies, no offense, but like, these stupid companies come after you. I get emails every day like, oh, we'll pay you $700 a month for Facebook ads. And
yeah,
I'm like, I don't even know what they're for. I don't want anything to do with them. Like, I post stuff because I think it's cool and I think it's fun. And I basically gave up posting anything other than motorcycles because no one cares. It gets no engagement. You know what I mean? Like, it's sad to say, but you know, my stories, I'll post my kid running around or falling or, you know, playing with the dog. So I'll do that on there. But like, it's crazy what the engagement thing is. And then all these companies and people like headhunters basically reach out to you and try and offer you money deals when you get to a certain follower count. And and like, I even talked to a bicycle company lately. I'm trying to get like a partnership with them. And I talked to them, like their main marketing woman, for, you know, an hour or two in person. And she said how she met and talked to someone's professional skier. And it was like a perfect crossover, like right in that number range, you know, like 200 something thousand followers on Instagram, incredible athlete, wanted to do like a partnership thing. Wasn't for asking for much, just wanted like do some bikes and posts. And she went through his Instagram and he had like those ads, you know, where it's like, oh, buy this, like get 10% off CBD, use my code, blah, blah, blah. And that's a turnoff for a lot of companies because they see that as being forced and not a natural thing. You know what I mean? So like on my Instagram, for a while there, Rockstar Energy had like their monthly post for their riders. And I don't know if you noticed, but they don't do it anymore because it was cringing to watch every single time. Like it was like, painful. Like people want to see something natural and not like forced content in your face that you don't even care about.
Right.
So, you know, this guy who was like a perfect candidate to basically be a partnership with this bicycle company and get a free bike and do whatever and ride it and post about it. She didn't want to give him a deal because she's the main marketing person and saw him basically doing these forced ads that weren't natural and just kind of make you cringe. And she's like, well, obviously he doesn't want this because like he wants this because it's an advantage to him, not because he wants to be a part of it, you know?
So that brings up a really good point. Like I've had a lot of guests talk about, you know, choosing who you want to work with. And we just released a podcast episode last week. So it's kind of date when I'm talking to Cody, the gentleman talked really about having that passion for the company that you want to work for. And if you don't have that passion for that company, it's not worth it. And you're not going to be able to drive the message home. And talking about that social media, this guy, or anybody that's doing it, which I get it too. If you can make more money easily, you know, it's hard to say no. Kind of like what you've talked about in the early in the podcast, saying no. But there's that line though that actually ruins your reputation, and it'll actually harm you. So there's that time where you do have to figure out, well, should I say yes or should I no? It's a hard decision to make because it's no money, or I could be making thousands of dollars, you know, six figures, sometimes seven figures a year, just for doing these little stupid things on my Instagram page. It's cool that you noticed that and how you're kind of stepping out of that and saying, no, this isn't worth it.
Yeah. For me, I know people follow me cause they think I do cool things, not because I'm trying to sell them on something I don't care about. So It is kind of ironic we're saying this cause I tell you, I shut all of them down, but I did have some company approach me last week and I normally like just never respond, but it was one I was like, I might actually want to try this. And I sent it to my wife. I was like, do you think I should do this? All they wanted was a story post. And it was like basically like an overnight oats type food. And I just wanted to try it because I was like, yeah, it was worth trying. Just like casually put it on my story. Like, I'll do that, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested in trying it. You know what I mean? So I'll share it. But other stuff, I just hate when things are forced. So like this thing, I actually want to try it. So I was like, oh, I don't feel so bad about it now. So one thing I do want to say about like saying yes or no, depending on stuff like that, like I just feel like I always want something with like quality to it versus quantity too. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I had my, like that helmet deal with Bell Helmets forever. I knew all the guys that worked there and I kind of like got dropped, but not really, but you know, budget cuts, all the stuff. They came out with a new helmet, but I think they just focused more of their stuff on guys that get a lot more content, like Axel Hodges, Tyler Bierman, like the free ride guys, and then like the Supercross team. So they sponsor a lot of the Supercross riders and teams, Bell does. So I was kind of left last minute with not much going on and had to figure something out. And I was between a couple different brands and talking back and forth. I had some phone calls with them. And at the end of the day, I ended up, you know, there's not a lot of people that wear Arai helmets in off-road, but I feel like Arai has always kind of had a reputation. And it just basically came down to me there. I felt like not that many people were in Arai. I know there's only like one other top GNCC rider, like basically at factory level, that runs Arai helmets. And, you know, you see a ton of people on other brands, and I kind of wanted to stand out and be different. So maybe that's where I'm riding a Sherco motorcycle also. Like, there's not that many people, but I feel like I've helped a ton build that brand. There's, I mean, they went from selling, I'm pretty sure it was under 400 bikes a year, like 200 bikes a year or something like that. And they got
in the US.
Yeah, in the US. And then they went to getting a new importership, and now we were up like over 1,000 bikes, I think, in the first year.
Wow.
That I switched. Yeah. So a huge increase. And in, like, we're basically begging France to get us more bikes to sell. So,
right.
I don't know. I just kind of like being different and feeling like I'm helpful to a program. Whereas at KTM, I just kind of felt like another number on the team. And if I wasn't there, like, they'll have someone else to cover. And now I kind of feel like I'm like a very important part of the program.
No, Cody, this is why I wanted to keep going with you, brother, because we're now unfolding a little bit more into the actual passion that you have for your industry, for your niche, and your love that you have for this, because you're taking it upon your shoulders again, Titan. I know you have that goat on your Instagram little thumbnail.
People started calling me Goaty.
I know.
Goaty, I thought that was pretty good.
Yep. So, like, being that guy, though, because everybody in the Hardened Dough knows your name and your love, and to hear the story of, like, why working with Sherco, why now you're working with Arai, to know these reasons, or to know the reason behind it, is exactly what people need to understand. So they can see that building a relationship with a sponsor is more about the passion and the drive that you have to help them and make them better. So if you had to pick a bunch of companies to work with, maybe you need to start trying them out, see which one you actually like and what works for you as well. Cause that's another way to go about it.
Yeah, but I mean, also it's tough for, like, people coming up, cause they don't have that opportunity to, you know what I mean? Like,
and they don't.
They'll take anything they can get, but, you know, if things keep improving, then it's great to have a relationship. And I think even the sponsors, like, hearing from you, or I'll break something and I'll send them photos and be like, oops, didn't mean to do this. Like, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I kind of, they're like, we run carbon guards on our bike from P3. Mm-hmm. And literally it's almost like a game. Like, he said he'll buy me a steak anywhere in the world if I break this, like, linkage guard.
Really?
And yeah, I mean, he might have been talking a little bit of shit, saying he'd, you know, buy me a steak from anywhere in the world, but I broke it and I was like, so when am I getting that steak? So it's, I think people appreciate having those relationships, and a huge part of it is, like, it helps to know people in the industry as well. That kind of goes a long way. Like, if you have a friend of a friend or this or that, like, having someone that knows you or knows your name really helps a lot, because if they don't know who you are, it's tough. And I've helped out some other kids that, mm-hmm. you know, with, like, clutch sponsorships or something like that. And, you know, I talked to the rep at Recluse, who I've known forever, since like 2012. And I'd be like, hey, I got this kid. He's like looking like, I don't know what you want to do. Should I send him your email or whatever? And, you know, a huge part of the time, no matter what, they'll give him at least like a 50% discount, because I have a good relationship with him, and it helps out, like, you know, my word helping someone else out helps out a ton for them. So, you know, I know just knowing people is a huge part of the game, and having a good reputation.
I think that's the hard part too, because, like you said a second ago, the new and up-and-comers, like, how do they get that? How do they get to that point of getting their name out there and getting these people to recognize them and know who they are? You stuck your neck out for somebody, but that's because you trusted the person. You may have known the person. And so you're like, hey, I feel comfortable actually doing this, because that puts your name on the line as well. So
yeah, I don't know. It's,
how do you think people can do that?
Man, people can't be afraid. Like, you can't be afraid to talk to people and
ask for help
and make it worthwhile. Yeah. Don't be afraid to ask for help. That's for sure. I mean, a good friend of mine is military, and he approaches every single company and goes, hey, do you guys do military discounts? And even if they don't do a military discount, they'll give him 10% off because he wasn't afraid to ask. So that's a big part of thing. Like, people like personality, and I don't know, it's, I was really shy growing up, really hardly ever liked to talk. So it's weird now that I do all like podcasts and speeches and this and that. And I think I'm still kind of awkward sometimes if, you know, I'm feeling out of place, but I don't know, not just don't be afraid and go forward. If you see someone you look up to, just talk to them. They're normal people, and that could help you out.
Absolutely. Cody, this has been great. You've given a ton of good information and a wealth of knowledge. Again, out of respect of your time, we're at that. We're actually 22 minutes over now. So I'm going to let you go, get back to your family. I'm grateful that you
I can hear my kid crying in the background now.
Oh, no.
It might be time for my wife's probably getting him ready for bed, and he's losing it. He doesn't like bedtime. I don't blame him.
Brother, I'm grateful that you spent the time with me tonight. I'm going to let you go, but let's have you drop your handles. And maybe even if you're working with somebody, you want to give a shout out to any companies that you're working with that need extra help, let's send people to them.
Yeah, no. Obviously, the Factory One Sherco Racing team kind of, I think we took a gamble on each other. It's been working out pretty well. And my mechanic, Cody One, I'm Cody Two, Cody One, he goes above and beyond what the job requires, and having a great relationship with him, talk to him pretty much every day, just helps both of us out and like make things gel a lot easier come race day. Rye Helmets, Scott Goggles, I've been with them for a while. Okay. Garnet Boots, FXR, Donnie at FMF. FMF's basically been supporting me crushing pipes since day one.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Crushing pipes since day one.
So, and CTI knee braces, I got custom braces, which I was in them when I blew my knee out, but the way I fell, sometimes you can't avoid getting hurt. It's inevitable. So sure. I wear them every time I ride. I'm naked without them. So I've ridden one time without knee braces since 2014, and I was scared for my life. So
I think I remember talking about that. I think I caught a video of you talking about it. I'm like,
you just feel naked. Like, you have to wear them.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's someone so much else. Like, obviously my family, my wife, I can't thank my kid, but he's there.
He made you a father.
Yeah. He did make me a father. Thank you for that. So, I don't know. And everyone that just supports me, on Instagram, you can find me CodyWeb2. Twitter, I never really do much on there, but sometimes I'm poking around, spying on things. CodyWeb_2. Facebook, I think just CodyWeb. There's CodyWeb Country. It's pretty funny.
I meant to talk about that.
Yeah, as a country singer. So I'm always like, I get like videos sent to me and like Instagram, like, great show tonight. And I was like, yeah, that's not me, but.
Yeah,
I'm glad you had a good time. So I actually met that guy. I went to his show. He came to California, cool. And I drove to his show. I was like, I have to meet Cody Webb Country. So I got a photo. There's three Cody Webbs in one photo all hanging out, because another Cody Webb I know that rides. We all showed up to the same place. So
not Cooper Webb, right? Cooper wasn't there.
Not Cooper Webb. Yeah, not Cooper Webb.
Okay, that's awesome. Okay, everybody, thanks so much. Cody, or thank you everybody for listening. Cody's been a fantastic guest. I'm super excited to release this episode with everybody. And guys, you got to follow Cody if you haven't already, not only from a perspective of a great writer, but also of a guy that wants to grow our industry. And so he's helping out as much as he can and in any way he can. So to get a hold of him as well, it's going to be, you can send him a question, because he does go through his questions or his DMs. He does periodically hop through them. So feel free to reach out to him.
But make it a legit question. Just don't go, yo, because I'm not going to respond to that.
Yep. Nope. All your sponsor questions, like, honestly, what we're doing in the Action Sports Club, bring them to us. We're here to talk sponsors and how we can help you become sponsorable. That's what our mission is. So, Cody, I appreciate it, man. Thanks again.
Yep. Have a good one.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you found value on this episode, be sure to share the vibes and subscribe, drop a review, and rate the podcast. If you want to further your knowledge on how we're helping people like you spend more time riding, be sure to head over to theactionsportspodcast.com and request an invite to join the fastest growing club in action sports. And come join the Action Sports Army by following us on all social media channels. Find us at The Action Sports Club. And thank you again for being a listener of the Action Sports Podcast.